Chapter 5. Into her eyes with his shy gray glance. Who can trust me? You know you really can. All the old frozen woes seemed to melt in her, and she murmured awkwardly, looking away from him. H, I'll wait. V, there had never been such a June in Eagle County. Usually it was a month of moods, with abrupt alternations of belated frost and midsummer heat. This year, day followed day in a sequence of temperate beauty. Every morning a breeze blew steadily from the hills. Toward noon it built up great canopies of white clouds that threw a cool shadow over fields and woods. Then before sunset the clouds dissolved again, and the western light rained its unobstructed brightness on the valley. On such an afternoon Charity Royal lay on a ridge above a sunlit hollow, her face pressed to the earth, and the warm currents of the grass running through her. Directly in her line of vision a blackberry branch laid its frail white flowers and blue-green leaves against the sky. Just beyond, a tuft of sweet fern uncurled between the beaded shoots of the grass, and a small yellow butterfly vibrated over them like a fleck of sunshine. This was all she saw, but she felt, above her and about her, the strong growth of the beeches clothing the ridge, the rounding of pale green cones on countless spruce branches, the push of myriads of sweet fern fronds in the cracks of the stony slope below the wood, and the crowding shoots of meadowsweet and yellow flax in the pasture beyond. All this bubbling of sap and slipping of sheaths and bursting of calyxes was carried to her on mingled currents of fragrance. Every leaf and bud and blade seemed to contribute its exhalation to the pervading sweetness in which the pungency of pine sap prevailed over the spice of thyme, and the subtle perfume of fern, and all were merged in a moist earth smell that was like the breath of some huge sun-warmed animal. Charity had lain there a long time, passive and sun-warmed as the slope on which she lay, when there came between her eyes, and the dancing butterfly the sight of a man's foot in a large worn boot covered with red mud. Oh, don't, she exclaimed, raising herself on her elbow and stretching out a warning hand. Don't what? A hoarse voice asked above her head. Don't stamp on those bramble flowers, you dolt, she retorted, springing to her knees. The foot paused, and then descended clumsily on the frail branch, and raising her eyes she saw above her the bewildered face of a slouching man with a thin sunburnt beard, and white arms showing through his ragged shirt. Don't you ever see anything, Lifhyatt? She assailed him, as he stood before her with the look of a man who has stirred up a wasp's nest. He grinned. Seen you? That's what I come down for. Down from where? She questioned, stooping to gather up the petals his foot had scattered. He jerked his thumb toward the heights. In cutting down trees for Dan Target. Charity sank back on her heels and looked at him musingly. She was not in the least afraid of poor Lifhyatt, though he came from the mountain, and some of the girls ran when they saw him. Among the more reasonable he passed for a harmless creature, a sort of link between the mountain and civilized folk, who occasionally came down, and did a little wood cutting for a farmer when hands were short. Besides, she knew the mountain people would never hurt her. Lif himself had told her so once, when she was a little girl, and had met him one day at the edge of Lawyer Royal's pasture. Hey, won't any of them touch you up there, fever you was to come up. But I don't suppose he will, he had added philosophically, looking at her new shoes, and at the red ribbon that Mrs. Royal had tied in her hair. Charity had, in truth, never felt any desire to visit her birthplace. She did not care to have it known that she was of the mountain, and was shy of being seen in talk with Lifhyatt. But today she was not sorry to have him appear. A great many things had happened to her since the day when young Lucius Harney had entered the doors of the Hatchard Memorial, but none, perhaps, so unforeseen as the fact of her suddenly finding it a convenience to be on good terms with Lifhyatt. She continued to look up curiously at his freckled weather-beaten face, with feverish hollows below the cheekbones, and the pale yellow eyes of a harmless animal. Wonder if he's related to me, she thought, with a shiver of disdain. Is there any folks living in the brown house by the swamp, up under Porcupine? She presently asked in an indifferent tone. Liff eyed, for a while, considered her with surprise. Then he scratched his head, and shifted his weight from one tattered soul to the other. There's always the same folks in the brown house, he said with his vague grin. They're from up your way, ain't they? Their name's the same as mine, he rejoined uncertainly. Charity still held him with resolute eyes. Here, I want to go there someday, and take a gentleman with me, that's boarding with us. He's up in these parts drawing pictures. She did not offer to explain this statement. It was too far beyond Liff Hyatt's limitations for the attempt to be worth making. He wants to see the brown house, and go all over it, she pursued. Liff was still running his fingers perplexedly through his shock of straw-colored hair. Is it a fellow from the city, he asked. Yes. He draws pictures of things. He's down there now drawing the Bonner house. She pointed to a chimney just visible over the dip of the pasture below the wood. The Bonner house? Liff echoed incredulously. Yes. You won't understand, and it don't matter. All I say is, he's going to the Hyatts in a day or two. Liff looked more and more perplexed. Ash is ugly sometimes in the afternoons. She threw her head back, her eyes full on Hyatts. I'm coming to. You tell him. They won't none of them trouble you, the Hyatts won't. What do you want they take a stranger with you though? I've told you, haven't I? You've got to tell Bash Hyatt. He looked away at the blue mountains on the horizon, then his gaze dropped to the chimney, top below the pasture. He's down there now? Yes. He shifted his weight again, crossed his arms, and continued to survey the distant landscape. Well, so long, he said at last, inconclusively, and turning away he shambled up the hillside. From the ledge above her, he paused to call down. Wouldn't go there a Sunday, then he clambered until the trees closed in on him. Presently, from high overhead, Charity heard the ring of his axe. She lay on the warm ridge, thinking of many things that the woodsman's appearance had stirred up in her. She knew nothing of her early life, and had never felt any curiosity about it. Only a sullen reluctance to explore the corner of her memory, where certain blurred images lingered. But all that had happened to her within the last few weeks had stirred her to the sleeping depths. As he had become absorbingly interesting to herself, and everything that had to do with her past was illuminated by this sudden curiosity. She hated more than ever the fact of coming from the mountain, but it was no longer indifferent to her. Everything that in any way affected her was alive and vivid. Even the hateful things had grown interesting, because they were a part of herself. I wonder if Liff Hyatt knows who my mother was? She mused, and it filled her with a tremor of surprise, to think that some woman who was once young and slight, with quick motions of the blood like hers, had carried her in her breast, and watched her sleeping. As he had always thought of her mother as so long dead, as to be no more than a nameless pinch of earth. But now it occurred to her, that the once young woman might be alive, and wrinkled and elf-locked like the woman she had sometimes seen in the door of the brown house, that Lucius Harney wanted to draw. The thought brought him back to the central point in her mind, and she strayed away from the conjectures roused by Liff Hyatt's presence. Speculations concerning the past could not hold her long, when the present was so rich, the future so rosy, and when Lucius Harney, a stone's throw away, was bending over his sketchbook, frowning, calculating, measuring, and then throwing his head back with a sudden smile that had shed its brightness over everything. She scrambled to her feet, but as she did, so she saw him coming up the pasture, and dropped down on the grass to wait. When he was drawing and measuring one of his houses, as she called them, she often strayed away by herself into the woods, or up the hillside. It was partly from shyness that she did so. From a sense of inadequacy that came to her most painfully when her companion, absorbed in his job, forgot her ignorance and her inability to follow his least illusion, and plunged into a monologue on art and life. To avoid the awkwardness of listening with a blank face, and also to escape the surprised stare of the inhabitants of the houses before which he would abruptly pull up their horse and open his sketchbook, she slipped away to some spot from which, without being seen, she could watch him at work, or at least look down on the house he was drawing. As he had not been displeased, at first, to have it known to North Dormer and the neighborhood, that she was driving Miss Hatchard's cousin about the country in the buggy he had hired of Lawyer Oil. As he had always kept to herself, contemptuously aloof from village lovemaking, without exactly knowing whether her fierce pride was due to the sense of her tainted origin, or whether she was reserving herself for a more brilliant fate. Sometimes she envied the other girls their sentimental preoccupations, their long hours of inarticulate philandering with one of the few youths who still lingered in the village, but when she pictured herself curling her hair or putting a new ribbon on her hat for Ben Fryer, one of the Solace boys, the fever dropped, and she relapsed into indifference. Now she knew the meaning of her disdains and reluctances. As he had learned, what she was worth when Lucius Arney, looking at her for the first time, had lost the thread of his speech, and leaned reddening on the edge of her desk. But another kind of shyness had been born in her. A terror of exposing to vulgar perils the sacred treasure of her happiness. She was not sorry to have the neighbors suspect her of going with a young man from the city, but she did not want it known to all the countryside how many hours of the long June days she spent with him. What she most feared was that the inevitable comments should reach Mr. Royal. Charity was instinctively aware that few things concerning her escaped the eyes of the silent man under whose roof she lived, and in spite of the latitude which North Dormer accorded to courting couples, as he had always felt that, on the day when she showed to open a preference, Mr. Royal might, as she phrased it, make her pay for it. How, she did not know, and her fear was the greater, because it was undefinable. If as he had been accepting the attentions of one of the village youths, she would have been less apprehensive. Mr. Royal could not prevent her marrying when she chose to. But everybody knew that going with a city fellow was a different, and less straightforward affair. Almost every village could show a victim of the perilous venture, and her dread of Mr. Royal's intervention gave a sharpened joy to the hours she spent with young Arnie, and made her, at the same time, shy of being too generally seen with him. As he approached, she rose to her knees, stretching her arms above her head with the indolent gesture that was her way of expressing a profound well-being. "I'm going to take you to that house up under Porcupine," she announced. "What house?" "Oh, yes, that ramshackle place near the swamp, with the gypsy-looking people hanging about. It's curious that a house with traces of real architecture should have been built in such a place. But the people were a sulky-looking lot. Do you suppose they'll let us in?" "They'll do whatever I tell them," she said with assurance. He threw himself down beside her. "Ill they?" he rejoined with a smile. "Ell, I should like to see what's left inside the house. And I should like to have a talk with the people. Who was it who was telling me the other day that they had come down from Gutenberg edition?" End of chapter.